Hi. Yes, the referendum is a really big deal for the FT, and actually probably about half of our audience is just going to be reading stuff about Brexit today. So it's been quite massive for this type of audience. I'm going to talk a little bit about audiences for journalism in general, and use the FT as an example. You can ask me any questions as we go, and we can have a conversation, because that's actually what this presentation is about as well. I use this word audience first a lot when I'm talking to my colleagues. It's definitely a buzzword, it's a bit cliche at this point, but it does kind of get the point across that journalists need to start thinking about their audience first, before they dive into anything else. They need to start thinking about where this is going and who is it going to be for. Just, again, a little bit about me. The audience engagement team is new at the FT. Charlie was just saying that it's not a job that existed a year ago. At the FT, actually, it's not a job that existed before last September, really. The team is a year old, and we've been gradually adding more members since then. I started in September. Before that, I worked as a user experience consultant at a design agency in London, helping designers and developers make their products more useful, more intuitive, more user-friendly, working with audiences to get to that place. And I was a journalist for 7 years in Canada before I moved to London, and I worked in digital media as well, doing editing. I thought I wanted to leave journalism, but then it turned out what I really was looking for was a job that combined both those things, and so that's what I do at the FT, and that's you'll see the thread of both those different worlds kind of as I speak here. The audience engagement team, essentially what we do is we're trying to grow our audience, but we're also trying to grow the right audience. And we do that externally through social media and through other platforms and trying to get the word out, trying to get our journalism in front of more people. But we also work a lot on cultural change within the newsroom, which is a really, really important part of audience engagement, is getting things right from the start before it ever gets out into people's hands. So, in the old days, media was essentially a monologue. There was broadcasters would send out the news, their information to people, to a silent captive audience, and there'd be a wall between journalists and the audience, and there was not very much penetration from one side to the other. Things have changed now. What we have here is a dialogue. So essentially it's dialogue between broadcasters on different platforms, and there's active audiences. They can respond, they can react, they can like us, they can share us, they can talk to us. That wall is becoming less and less distinct, really. And in today, even right now, it's not even online, really. It's mobile. It's on our phones. It's not even happening on news sites. Over the past sort of 18 months, I'd say the preference for reading news on these phones has completely exploded, and as a result, like other platforms like Facebook and Twitter and Snapchat, Google have more power than ever before, really. People aren't necessarily coming to the FT anymore for their news. They're going to social media, they're going elsewhere, they're finding news elsewhere. They're watching more video, and that changes the way that we've had to do video at the FT as a result. And then more importantly, there's really just infinitely a million other things that they could be doing on their phones rather than reading FT news. Like we're not just competing against other media, other newspapers now, we're competing for attention in social media, in all the apps, and Candy Crush is also we could consider them a competitor. We have a harder time than ever, really, reaching people because they have access to everything, and whereas that was not really the case back in the old days. So what we have to do in response, this is the big challenge here. We need to create loyalty. We need a relationship that lasts with our readers. This is how the FT and other media are going to get and keep and grow the subscriber base in the future. Readers, we are a subscription-based service. People have to pay to read the FT. We're not free. So that creates additional challenges. But it also, in some ways, makes things a bit easier because we do get more data on our audience, which I'll talk about a bit later. So this is kind of what we're thinking now at the FT and a transition that we want to make. Essentially, as journalists, we need to be providing a service to our readers. If you think about the things that you do online and the things that you purchase, a lot of them use this kind of framework. like when people get into an Uber instead of a taxi, or they buy groceries online, or they buy a book from Amazon, there's something about that that's more useful service than what we previously had before. I'm sorry to talk. There's a field of user experience study called service design, and there's some thinkings around there that you can apply to journalism about getting the service to people in the right time, in the right place, in the right way, and having that sort of be a seamless journey from beginning to end, and that's something that we're trying to think about a little bit at the FT, is like, what is the service that we're providing, and the things that startups are doing, can we actually apply those to news as well? And really, we have to change the way that we work, because when you think about journalism in the old days, if in the monologue days, you had that journalist kind of does their whole thing, then they publish, and then they're immediately kind of on to the next project. Whereas the reader is not involved at all in the beginning, and then at the end they're doing all their reaction, but there's that wall in between, and there's not a lot of back and forth happening. And that doesn't have to be that way anymore. The journalist can involve the reader from the beginning, whether it's just having conversations with people on Twitter, or reading comments, talking in real life, talking on Facebook, involving that, evolving their thinking based on that. The FT commenters, for instance, are really, really smart, and we often get really intelligent debate in our comment section that then goes on to become new articles, and that's been something new. And post-publication, sometimes we can keep the conversation going after a story is published. We can talk to readers in many different ways, and it does evolve the way that we've been working. This is another change we've had at the FT recently, which is just questions that sound really simple when you read them, but actually they're really not that easy to answer. When a reporter might come to me and say, oh, I've got this great idea, we're going to do something called Robot Week. Every day for a week, we're going to publish some stories about robots and artificial intelligence, and it's going to be great. It's going to be like Shark Week, but robots. And then I'll say, okay, well, who is this for? And then they look at me, like, of course, it's for everybody. Like, what do you mean, who's this for? It's for everybody. That's not the right answer, because you can't be all things to all people. And the FT doesn't reach everybody, and that's really just an impossible goal. You need to kind of think a little bit more clearly about who exactly we're going for. So we thought about it, and we kind of decided, all right, so this project is really for readers of the FT who are not really up to date on artificial intelligence and tech. They may not work in that sector. Maybe they don't read much about robots before. We're gonna get them up to speed with everything that's been going on in the industry, and talk a bit about what the impact is going to be when robots take over all our jobs. So that was where we started there. And we also have to think about what people do need to know. So as I said, they kind of need to get up to speed. We need to take a more broad view. We need to talk less about the specifics of the technology and more about what it means. And we can involve readers' expertise, again, asking in the comments section for stories that they might have. And finally, we need to really think about how people are going to find the story, what we call the user journey. So, as I mentioned before, our platform is everywhere now. People don't just come to the homepage anymore to read our stories. They can find us on Facebook, on Twitter. They might find a link somewhere on the internet or through Google and get to their story sideways. We can't just assume that everybody's going to come to the homepage, click on that story, and then read it, and read all the other stories that are around it. So we need to think more specifically about what path we want people to take, and make sure that they can get it no matter how they access that story. And what's the best time to publish, of course, is a big one, because we want to be useful at the time that people actually need it. And a little bit more on that. This is sort of a pet project of mine recently. So what this chart shows is the audience for the FT in different time zones. And the bars here are just for our major bureaus. So essentially, nearly all of our audience comes to us in the morning, mainly London time. And the peak is 7 o'clock in the morning. And that's a lot earlier than people originally thought. That's really early. And then when you look at this chart sort of globally with all these different time zones combined, you see another bump at lunchtime. But actually, when you separate it, it's not what's happening here. It's New York waking up, and they also have a peak time at 7 a.m. And London sort of going a bit down throughout the whole day there. And this is sort of changed things, because now we need to realize that we kind of need to make sure that when people, you know, in that period from what, 7 to 5 to 8, need to make sure that they have what they need to do their jobs. People do read the FT to help them with their work, to inform their day, their decisions. They use it to get help in their career. We need to make sure that we give them what they need at the time that they need it. So, for example, when I first came in September, one of the first things we realized was the UK desk was publishing almost all their stories at night. Therefore, all their audience was coming the next morning when every single thing on their page was about 14 to 16 hours old. And it just, you know, it didn't look fresh, it didn't look timely, it didn't look like it was something that was helpful or useful, and they had really low traffic. And so essentially what they did was they put the important stuff out in the morning, spread the rest throughout the day, and it made a big difference to their readership. And everything is, now that they're thinking about their audience this way, we can sort of see their coverage becoming more relevant to real people in that sense. And we also, there was a myth that there was a commute home bump, that people would be reading on their phones in the commute home. That's not actually what's happening at all. There's no peak in the afternoon on the commute home, so that's changed things. That changed things as well. And we also have Asia waking up in the morning too. So sometimes we get our Hong Kong bureau to publish some things in the middle of the night, targeted at that crowd. So this is one thing. And now the next stage of this is trying to figure out exactly what type of stories do people want when. Aside from time zones, but that's more to come. So that was essentially the service, and now we're getting into more of that dialogue that I was talking about. So this is sort of the holy grail, really, is the how do you community, really. It's the ultimate signal of engagement. It's like a group of people who are going to read about you, and they're going to discuss, and they're going to share. Both on our platform and off, and that's really an ultimate engagement, is we want to build a community around our story. And social media is a great way to do that. Social media is at the FT is probably smaller than other news organizations, but it's grown about, I don't know, 300% or something in the last year. It's gone massive. Part of that is just that we have a paywall, so a lot of the people who follow us on social media are existing subscribers. But one thing that helps is that people do have one click free a day, so that is a really good way for us to reach new people. And the platforms now give us really good ways to talk to people directly. Facebook Live is very trendy right now, and it's very good. It works really well. As a newspaper, this is totally new for us. Like, this is more, our journalists are not trained as broadcast. They're not trained for broadcast. They can't just get up there and talk for hours about nothing while waiting for a vote to happen. So there's not that many people in the newsroom who feel confident enough to do that. So this is Sam Jones. He gave us a try during the Brussels attack. He just kind of did a whole thing about what happened so far, what we know. And then he took comments from readers for about half an hour. And I took a screenshot like during the events, but we eventually got more than 100 questions. And later on, he went to comments and answered a few more after it was over. And it was a really kind of a better way to cover this than what we'd normally done with the story, because we could actually tailor it to what people really wanted to know. And we'll be doing more of these tomorrow, actually. There's going to be two. There's going to be one in the morning about the markets, and then and one later on in the day just about the political reaction to the vote. So you can watch and see how that goes. finally, a lot of news organizations are getting rid of comments sections these days. And I do understand some of the rationale. They are quite labor-intensive, and they can involve a lot of troll control. But we at the FT want to expand, not contract, our comment sections. We think that they're an amazing engagement tool, and we think that they're also a really good way to improve our journalism. We encourage our journalists to get involved in the comment section, to talk to readers there after they publish their stories, and they get news tips and they get sources that way as well. So it's a good thing. This is a project. Essentially, what happened was, when we noticed in the comment sections there was a lot of British expats who wanted to talk about the referendum. So we put out a form. We just said, you know, are you a British expat living somewhere else in Europe? We want to hear from you. Come tell us your stories. And we got about 600 responses. So we put together this little interactive thing. And you can kind of sort different expats based on where they live or what they think. And you can read people's stories in their own words. And I think the end result is even more powerful than having a reporter go out there and interview and then write it. Because what you have here is sort of unfiltered. It's people's voices in their own words. And it's just a more engaging way of presenting that, rather than a more old-fashioned just print text kind of way. And then the other sort of question close to my heart here is about data. So we need to really think about what we're trying to do. We don't just try and get the biggest and best audience in the world. We need to really think about what are we actually trying to achieve here, and how do we measure it? And the things I've talked about so far are actually not that easy to measure, like a community, a dialogue, talk interaction. Those are quite fuzzy concepts. So we have to think a little bit more creatively about exactly how we're keeping score. And also, data is a really good way for us to get to know our audience, because we're a subscription-based business. People are logged in. We know what they're reading. We know, like, CEOs of companies, what kinds of stories that they read, because it's all tracked. We can send people emails based on what they've read before in the past. We can segment our readers based on industry and interests and all those sort of things. So we have an advantage. The ST does have an advantage of that. Even though our audience may be smaller than some other media, we can sort of be a little bit more specific about learning about our audience and what they want. This is Lantern. Lantern is a new analytics tool that we just launched in March. So it's not that we didn't have an analytics tool before, we did, but it was not very user-friendly. It was called Betsy, and only 40 people a month used it. So really, really poor take-up. And that changed. We totally revamped it, went around the newsroom, and we asked people what they needed from data and what they wanted to know. And one of the things that they were really keen on is they wanted to be able to see how this story compares with other stories. Because actually, like I said before, we're not chasing the biggest number of page views. Like, there's a story in companies is always going to get more views than a story in personal finance. So now in Lantern, you can compare it to similar stories, and you can see how your story compares on different levels. We've spent a lot of time talking about time on page, scroll depth, retention rate. That's essentially the people who stayed on the FT after they read this story. And another thing that we're working on lately is trying to figure out is, can we wrap up all these metrics into one global engagement metric? And we're talking to our data science team to kind of put some statistical math behind that, so that we can actually look more, an easier way to see how engaging a story it is, not just looking at volume, which is what I think mostly what our analytics tools give us now. You can and it updates live too, so you can watch the audience reading stuff as it goes. This is a very average story, which is why I chose it. This story is interesting because it's very simple, but it kind of wraps up a lot of the stuff I've been talking about. This story has nearly 3 million views right now, and although I said that we don't care about page views because they're not necessarily a signal of engagement, there's something quite powerful about that many people coming to this one really simple page. And when you look deeper into the analytics, you can sort of start to make guesses as to why. All this is it's a poll of polls. It's taking all the polls. It's doing a little bit of Nate Silver type stats analysis and putting together, you know, this is what all the polls together say that the sentiment is in the UK versus Leave or Remain. And what it does is you can see, first of all, it really is a service. FT readers need this information. If they, you know, work in hedge funds, they want to know how to make their bets. You know, the currency traders, if they work in government, they need to know this information for their contingency plans. This is just a one-stop shop. You come to this website, here's the numbers, there you go, you can bookmark it, come back. We are seeing that most people are coming back to it multiple times because the polls do update in real time whenever anyone comes in. And then, conversation-wise, this one has also been interesting. There's no comments on this page, but we've written stuff around it. There's a blog post about the methodology. Loads of readers arguing with us in the comment section about that, and the guy who made the poll tracker responded. We're seeing a lot of people talking about it on social media. John Oliver in Last Week Live projected it on the weekend, which was quite amazing for us, and people are screenshotting that and sharing it all over Twitter, too. So this little tiny little simple project that nobody really thought very much of when we first launched it has turned out to outperform nearly everything that we've done. So it's been quite interesting. I think in the future we're going to think more about these little side services that we can create from big events like this. However, although I'm saying we're trying to do things in new formats and new ways, and there's a lot of cultural change going on, this doesn't change really the fundamentals. We're not ever going to do clickbait journalism because it's doesn't really work with our business model. We don't need to get the most people, but there's no value for us in getting the most people possible to read our stories, because we need the right people. This is the type of stuff that gives us an audience. This is why people keep coming back to the FT. Last year, our most popular story of the year was actually about the business of ISIS, looking at how they make their money and spend their money and manage their terrorist organization like a Fortune 500 company. We see over and over again that looking at data, and that doesn't actually dilute the quality of our journalism, and we uphold these values more than ever before. What's changing really is the process behind it. Like, we found that internally we have to collaborate much more within departments. We can't just, previously I think all the desks kind of acted like individual countries, and now we find we have to work together on topics more often. We need to talk to people in marketing because we can't just leave the marketing part at the end. It needs to be integrated from the beginning. And actually our marketing department has some of the best data about our audience, and getting some of their knowledge into our hands has been really quite powerful. We need to talk to the technology teams more, because they're building the platforms that we put our journalism on top of. And all these, at the FT at least, we have editorial on the first two floors, and then the rest of the building, the rest of the four floors are people in marketing, communications, technology, and there was no interaction whatsoever between all those floors, and that's completely changed. I spend all day just going up and down talking to people in other departments, and it's that's the process that we need to do. Like, we can't just work in silos anymore. And pretty much that's it. All the audience engagement is a work in progress. It's new to the FT, it's new everywhere, and we're always trying to we're doing experiments every day to try and see what happens. And it's been having interesting results, changing. All the other media are working on sort of similar issues as well, so you've probably heard some things in common with what I've said to maybe what you've heard from other people. And it's an interesting area, and it's really valuable, and it's more important than ever. News is not less important now just because people have lots of other things to look at in Facebook. And we do think that we can provide a really important service to people. It's just a matter of getting it into that timely, right format, useful sort of package, and giving it to people exactly when they need it and when they want it.